I'm with Neil Hamilton, the MS for Mid and West Wales. Neil, we've just spoken to the First Minister, Mark Drakeford. He's made the announcement. Nothing much has changed except that he's proclaimed this 5-mile limit of travel in Wales. We put a question to Mark Drakeford, which was why the Welsh Government didn't consider a region-by-region approach, given that there are only 59 deaths in the Mid and West Wales region out of a population of 940,000, and that 5 miles limitation to travel is really unrealistic for rural communities. What are your views on that? What should the First Minister have said today?
Well, clearly the restrictions which are still in place are ridiculous. What matters is not the distance that you are going to travel between home and wherever it is you're going to have your social gathering, but how you're going to behave when you get to your destination. I mean, if you get into your car to go and visit somebody, what difference does it make if it's 5 miles or 500 miles? If you're not going to get out of the car and socialise with anybody or mix with anybody else on the way. So I think it's absurd. And as regards rural, I think it just goes to show how Cardiff-centric the Welsh Government is. They all live in Cardiff, they work in Cardiff Bay. In the case of Mark Drakeford, he represents a Cardiff constituency, and so does Vaughan Gething, the health minister. They think in this narrow compass. And as far as rural Wales is concerned, I mean, it might as well not exist, I think, in the way they look at problems of this kind. After all, if you live in Powys, it's a huge county, and you can go for miles and miles without seeing anybody, actually, let alone finding a shop. It's quite wrong to make prescriptive rules for this. People should behave sensibly, obviously, in their own self-interest. Anybody who is vulnerable will naturally want to be cautious. I'm behaving in a cautious way because I'm the age I am, even though I'm in robust health as far as I know. But nevertheless, why take unnecessary risks? And that's the approach that the government should have. I mean, there are other questions. If you live within 5 miles of the Welsh border, for example, whether that's in Powys or Monmouthshire or wherever, you can cross the border and go for hundreds of miles lawfully, because if you travel in England, you can go as far as you like. But coming the other way, of course, it doesn't work in the same way. So I think these kinds of anomalies are not contributing to a sensible outcome of the relaxation.
We put that to the First Minister, and in a way we said, look, this is unrealistic. The Welsh people of Wales would understand that. And they have been observing the restrictions and the travel and so on. And he said he didn't feel the people of Wales would understand the complexities of a region by region approach. But a reporter did highlight what you said about the living on the border and so on. And his response to that was, the people on the border are very sensible, and they've been used to living like this for some time. It was quite an astonishing response, wasn't it?
Well, clearly, if the First Minister thinks he can't trust his own people to be sensible and to take a proportionate attitude towards restrictions in their own self-interest, I think he's got a very low estimation of the Welsh people.
You talk about Cardiff-centric, and here we have
5 miles in Cardiff, and you get to the city boundary. So you could meet God knows how many people along the way, walking along the streets of Cardiff. If you walk 5 miles out in the middle of, say, Radnorshire, then you may not see anybody at all.
Mm. You talk about Cardiff-centric, and what we have here, and a lot of the reporters that were questioning the First Minister today were highlighting this, that a country mile is far longer than a city mile, and that there are complexities. We have, and you may have seen the numbers from Public Health Wales, that east of Wales, obviously, the city centres, the hotspots, Cardiff and Newport, are the sort of epicentres of COVID-19. But the same rules are applying, the same approach is applying to people in Carmarthenshire, as you say, Ceredigion, Powys and so on. Mm. are you now going to be pushing on the prime the first minister seemed to be signaling that they had considered this regional approach, but they were, you know, they weren't quite sure. Will you now be pushing for this regional approach to look at the R numbers for powers for Mid and West Wales Command and Shire and saying, look, actually, we should really be lifting these restrictions and saying to people in Cardiff, Newport and so on, you cannot go there, they cannot come here. And people would understand that, wouldn't they?
Of course. Well, you'd think so. You know, I represent Mid and West Wales. It's 75% of the landmass of the entire country. There are five regions that elect regional members to the Senedd. They're all of roughly equal population, but very, very different geographical areas. You know, I represent, as I say, 75% of the entire country by geography. So it's absurd to treat Mid and West Wales in the same way as, say, South Wales Central, which is only Cardiff and the Cynon Valley and the Rhondda Valleys. So we should definitely have a policy which reflects local circumstances. And I've been a sceptic about the lockdown for the last few weeks. You can understand why it was imposed right at the very start, when we knew very little about the way in which the virus was going to develop, either in this country or indeed internationally. We've learned an enormous amount in the last couple of months, and I've been urging the First Minister to be bolder rather than timid in relaxing this lockdown, because this is actually screwing our economy, and that's going to affect people's living standards for years to come. So we can't afford to continue this unnecessarily for a moment longer.
Before we look at the field hospitals and the numbers and so on there, let me give you this example, and you'd appreciate this, championing the rural community and farming community. A chap from Kidwelly who works on the silage, and you know the contractors travel around Wales, maybe travels 30, 40, 50 miles to do that job. What is the difference between that man, who's the contractor, who goes home to his family, and the people who are living sort of side by side in homes in Carmarthenshire?
Well, of course, this is another absurdity in the system, isn't it? There is no difference at all. I mean, the regulations are shot through with all sorts of anomalies and inconsistencies. Instead of doing what they've done in Sweden, for example, where they haven't had a formal lockdown at all, but they've had very detailed guidance to people on how to behave sensibly in their own personal self-interest. And the Swedes have responded accordingly. Bars and restaurants and hotels and so on have not been closed by law, but the receipts of those who are in the hospitality industry are down by over 70% because of what people are deciding to do for themselves. And the record in Sweden of the infection with coronavirus and the fatalities that have come from it is actually a better record than in the United Kingdom. You know, there's 3,000 people per million have been infected with coronavirus in Sweden. It's 3,500 in the United Kingdom. But of course, as you were saying earlier on, these cases have been concentrated in the cities. You know, Sweden is a huge country geographically, but again, most of the population lives in Stockholm, Gothenburg, and other big cities. And they have a totally different approach in urban areas from the approach that they have in rural areas. This is exactly what we should be doing in this country, instead of which the entire economy has been wrecked. We'll be paying a huge price for this. And it's all on the back of a panic, which I think has not been justified by the degree of threat from the virus.
Let's look at the numbers then. The First Minister was saying track and trace starts on Monday, and yet he was saying the R number remains the same as it was 3 weeks ago. When I asked him about, you know, whether or not these people who are tracked and traced would be moved into the very expensive field hospitals that the public have paid for most generously in Wales, he said, no, they're going to be self-isolating as normal. And if they do get unwell, really unwell, yes, they may go, they have all the facilities of the NHS at their disposal. Answer me this, Mr. Hamilton, what is the purpose of these field hospitals?
Well, there is no purpose served now. You could see when the decision was taken to set them up, everybody thought that hospitals were going to be overwhelmed with cases of coronavirus. Well, that didn't happen. And in fact, even in normal intensive care units inside hospitals, I believe that about one third of those beds have been unoccupied over the last few weeks as well. And of course, no beds have been occupied at all in the field hospitals. So there's been a huge waste of money there. However understandable you might think it was at the time the decision to build them was taken. But you know, this so-called R figure is meaningless. I mean, I've been looking at the work of Professor Sunetra Gupta, who's the professor of theoretical immunology in the University of Oxford. And this is what she says about the R virus. She says she doesn't believe that the R rate is a useful tool in making decisions about government policies, as an R rate is, and I quote here, principally dependent on how many people are immune. And we don't know how many people are immune because we've not done a random testing of the population in order to determine how many have been infected already. Professor Gupta believes that maybe a half of the population in this country had been infected by the time the lockdown started. So, you know, the government says, and I'm talking about the UK government here as much as the Welsh government, the government says it's going to be guided by the science, but they've not been guided by the science at all. They've been guided by a form of statistical fantasy, actually. The original study by Professor Neil Ferguson, remember the guy who had to resign because he broke his own lockdown rules in order to get as close as he possibly could to his lover. Well, he said that as many as 500,000 people are at risk of dying from this virus. And what we know from the figures around the world is that the infection rate, this is a fraction of 1%, and the fatality rate is 1/8 of that. So, you know, those initial studies were scaremongering, Armageddon scenarios, which had no credibility because none of them had been peer-reviewed. And we don't know what was the assumption on which those conclusions were arrived at. You know, computer models work on the basis of garbage in, garbage out. We know that, don't we? That if we'd been guided by the science, we would have been guided by the medics, not the statisticians.
Would you also throw into that mix the stats that the majority of these cases would be isolated anyway in old people's homes?
Well, we now know that 40% or more of the fatalities are occurring in nursing homes and care homes. And instead of locking down on those right at the start, we were actually discharging people from hospitals who had had the virus or might still have had it, sending them into the most vulnerable parts of the country. I mean, you couldn't have made it up, really. I mean, it was the exact diametrical opposite of common sense. We were actually infecting people who were most vulnerable as a deliberate act of policy, whilst locking down the entire country, 99% of whose population wouldn't suffer any ill effects from this virus. It's estimated that 98 or 99% of people who get this virus don't know they've got it, and they won't know they've had it once the infection is past its peak. So, you know, we've taken a sledgehammer here to crack a nut instead of having a targeted approach, as some countries like Australia had and South Korea, where they locked down early, used a test and trace policy, which was fit for purpose. We're starting it now, you know, 2 months after the lockdown started. But by now, a very large proportion of the people who are susceptible to this virus have probably got it or had it.
We've been contacted recently by a care home worker, an agency worker that travels around care homes. We won't name her, we won't say where she's from or which county she's in, her anecdotal evidence really was that most of the homes that she had been working in were filthy, dirty, appalling conditions, disregard for any form of PPE and some of the rules and regulations. And she insisted that this was because none of these homes were being inspected at the moment. Do you have concerns, you know, in that area that we, as you said earlier on, we really need to focus more heavily on that community and what's going on there and how they're being dealt with?
Well, definitely. I haven't actually had anybody come to me with evidence of that kind. But if they've come to you and there is a likelihood that these practices are going on in the community, then clearly something's got to be done about it. Of course, they should be inspected. And there's no reason why PPE couldn't be provided for inspectors to ensure that the rules are being observed in these places. Because this is irrespective of coronavirus, no nursing home should be dirty, because there are other infections that might be picked up as well. And obviously old people who are in ill health anyway or frail are at greatest risk. And it shows the cockeyed nature of the policy and the way in which this is being executed.
I should add that we were sent evidence photographs as well that bear out her testimony. Looking at the economy then, the First Minister didn't really allude to anything, any strong message in there about the economy other than businesses should ready themselves for some form of future, you know, lifting of restrictions and for the rules and regulations. But would you concur that most businesses haven't got a clue what's going on, what to expect and what the rules are, what the measures are, how much this is going to cost them to implement?
No, well, that's absolutely right, isn't it? They're no less in the dark now than they were this morning before the First Minister's press conference and his announcement. And this is what we've been complaining about in the Senate all along, that they aren't giving people any hard and fast information at all on the basis of which they can make sensible business decisions. After all, you know, lots of businesses have had no income at all for 2 months, and forward contracts have also been cancelled as well. The whole of the hospitality businesses shut down. The tourism industry is paralysed and is likely to continue to be paralysed, because one thing we know from what the Welsh Government has said is that tourist-based enterprises will be the last ones to be released from the lockdown. And again, in this blanket policy of closure seems to me to be quite wrong, because if you've got a business where social distancing is possible, why should you not be able to open it? And people take decisions for themselves on the degree of risk that they're prepared to assume. We do this in every other walk of life. After all, you know, we've had flu epidemics many times in the course of my lifetime, some of them a lot more severe in their effects than the coronavirus seems to have had. And we had no such draconian measures taken as we've had this time. And I think what's happened now is that people have been so spooked by the government's policy of total lockdown that there's considerable fright in the community anyway, and people are being dissuaded from doing things that they might otherwise safely do, and it's going to have very, very serious implications for the economy of Wales. After all, we're the poorest part of the UK anyway. You know, we have the average income in Wales is 3/4 of the average income in the UK. We're a poor country. And if that poverty is exacerbated by the deliberate actions of the government, then I think that's a very shocking state of affairs. And they seem to be completely oblivious of this. They seem to think that, oh, well, once the lockdown is lifted, then things will go back to normal. I can assure you things will not be going back to normal. After all, a lot of businesses that won't survive this. And that's a very, very sad thing indeed. I mean, I've heard lots of small businesses contact me in a state of utter desperation. And even with the help that's been given, it isn't going to compensate them for all the losses that they've made. If they're getting loans from the government, then that's fine for the moment. But what happens when they've got to pay those loans back? Are they going to have supernormal profits so that they can pay them back more easily? But that isn't going to happen, is it? Because as a result of relaxing the lockdown, there'll be a very gradual return to normality. It could be a year, 18 months, 2 years, even for those businesses that are strong enough to survive.
The Senate isn't really operational at the moment, other than virtually online and so on. Political parties obviously been very critical of the First Minister and the Labour government in the Senate. Some may say that you're politically point scoring rather than doing anything useful in the process. How would you answer your critics? What are you doing to influence and to make things happen at the moment, given that you're sitting in a room somewhere in England there?
Well, I'm playing a full part in the Senate, so far as the system allows me to do so. And I give the Welsh Government the benefit of my advice. And it's not just political point scoring. You know, I've just quoted to you the professor of theoretical immunology at the University of Oxford, who takes a different view from the Welsh Government. And I've given many other examples in the course of the last few weeks in my contributions in the Senate by Skype or Zoom. What I've tried to get the government to focus upon is the science. You know, these are the scientists. So why not listen to them and be guided in the way in which you relax these regulations by the true level of risk? That's all I can do. That's not to say the Welsh government ever listens to anything I say, because they think that we have got nothing to contribute, you know, and that they know everything, whereas in fact, you know, Welsh government is a shambles in so many ways, and the health service in Wales is an absolute shambles, as we know. Our education results are the worst in the UK, according to the international league tables. But no matter what you say, they don't change their policy. So we lumber along in this half-light world of failure. But I keep on making my points, and if that's regarded as political point scoring, then so be it. Doesn't matter to me. I'm not making points for the sake of making them. I'm would like to think, an intelligent contribution to debate. I never get any answers to any of my questions. I merely get insults back in return. You know, I'm a climate change denier, or I'm a coronavirus denier. I'm not a denier of anything. What I say is we should be guided by evidence, guided by science, and guided by reason. And that's what I shall continue to do.
And with that in mind, and with the evidence you've seen, would you say it's safe to open the schools?
Well, Professor Gupta, whom I quoted earlier on, thinks that it is safe to open the schools because there's no evidence that very small children can contract this disease or pass it on. And anybody under the age of 60 or 65 is at almost no risk of suffering any severe ill effects, even if they do contract the virus. Overwhelmingly, the people who've had a hard time with the virus are over 65. And as we said earlier on, amongst the fatalities, 40%, 50% are amongst people who are actually not economically active at all and are in care homes or nursing homes or hospital. And a number of people have contracted the disease from going into hospital, just like with our MRSA. You go in with one thing, you come out with something worse. If you come out at all, a lot of people come out feet first. Well, you know, that's the key point here is, what is the degree of risk, not only by geography, as we were talking about earlier on, the difference between Mid and West Wales on the one hand and Cardiff on the other, but also by population groups. And young people are at almost no risk from this disease. What matters is, so far as you can arrange it, is that people keep their distance from those who might be vulnerable. That is overwhelmingly people who are in the older section of the community, like me. And even though I appear to be in very good health, I don't want to take unnecessary risks, but I'm not hiding away.
You have the advantage of being able to, in England, travel wherever you want. If you were in Wales, would you flout the law, as Dominic Cummings did, go over that threshold of 5 miles?
I don't believe it. I don't believe in breaking the law at all. I'm only an hour from Cardiff, where I am here in the car. I'm not a million miles from the border. But it's important that people should obey the law, but if the law is an ass, then they're not going to, are they? And the longer this lockdown continues, the more restive people are going to become, and the more likely they are to take risks. And you know, people are not going to obey a law that they don't believe is rational or sensible. We've got a long history of civil disobedience for desirable ends, you know, going back to the suffragettes or the Chartists in the 19th century, where people broke the law when the law was repressive. So in principle, of course, we should obey the law. But the reality is people only obey the law if they think it's reasonable and right.
This period of time in history will go down as a great success for many of our political leaders, but an absolute disaster for some others. Boris Johnson, possibly Mark Drakeford. What's your view? Do you think they've done okay, or do you think this really is going to be the final nail in the coffin for those two leaders in particular?
Well, it's impossible to say. We won't know until we are able to conduct a proper post-mortem, if that's the right word to use, in this context, on the way in which the pandemic actually panned out. What Professor Johan Giesecke, the Swedish government's chief advisor, has said, he wrote an article in the medical journal The Lancet just 3 weeks ago, is that in a year's time, he said he would be amazed if there was any difference in the infection rates and the fatality rates of any substantial kind between all the countries, in certainly Western advanced countries, in a year's time, regardless of what policy their government had. He represents a government which has had no lockdown. The United Kingdom, of course, we've had a severe lockdown, as has almost all of the rest of Europe. But he says that all we've been doing is delaying the onset of infection. We haven't, because there isn't any means of doing so, been able to stop it once and for all. Until there's a vaccine which works and which is widely available, then this disease is going to remain in the population and people will get infected over time. So this is the key point here. Is it worth paying the price that we have paid in economic terms in order to get a short delay in the infection rate of the disease? And personally, I say no, it isn't, because the price that we've paid, and I know this from friends of mine who have been frightened to go to hospital, even though they've got cancer and other serious conditions, that they're putting themselves at risk in other ways than getting infected with coronavirus. We know from what the GPs have been telling us that people presenting themselves at surgeries or virtual surgeries have been very substantially reduced with the symptoms of cancer and heart disease and so on and so forth. So there are health consequences of this policy as well, which will produce serious ill effects for people, and including many, many deaths in future. Because although we know that people are being on the death certificate, says amongst all the various causes of death that they had coronavirus, we don't know whether they just died of the disease or died with the disease. To what extent did the virus actually contribute to the cause of death? This is something that we don't know. So all these things will need to be looked into when we have an inquiry into this episode in our lives. And I think the politicians actually will come out of it very poorly, because I think they've been panicked into taking the wrong decisions whilst ignoring the sensible micro decisions that could have made a difference to the most vulnerable parts of the population.
Okay, Neil Hamilton, many thanks for speaking to us as usual. Outspoken, controversial, informative, and we look forward to seeing your beard in three weeks' time.
Well, whether it survives or not, but Christine says she likes it. So she who must be obeyed may win the day.
Okay, diolch yn fawr I chi gyd.
Diolch yn fawr iawn.